Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with some special coverage here on Rob Has a Podcast. I am very lucky to be here joined by the great Felipe Chamon to talk about a project that he has been working on with a few collaborators here over the last couple of months. And very excited to bring to you a Hispanic and Latinx representation on competition reality show panel. Felipe, how are you?
I'm doing good, Rob. How are you doing on this fine day?
Yeah, I'm very excited to hear about what you and the other panelists have been working on.
Yeah, so we discussed similar to how Kevin and Sasha talked about Asian representation back in May, and Matt Scott and all the wonderful contributors talked about Black representation during the Black Voices of RHP podcast. We just wanted to continue that conversation about representation on these reality shows that we are so passionate about. So from September 15th to October 15th, it is Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month. So we thought it was fitting to bring these conversations at this time to RHAP, and we're so appreciative of the opportunity and the platform you've given us.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think that the listeners really appreciate when we have creators who are able to, you know, speak to these different issues. What are we going to hear about on this panel today?
So on this panel, we're going to talk about like some of the past history of representation and what we would like to see more of in the future, as well as defining different themes and definitions. So we have Latinx and Hispanic, which are very similar, but also very different. So we define those topics. And we also have a couple of subtopics in terms of intersectionality, what it means to be Afro-Latino, or what it means to be queer and Latino, what it means to be a woman who is Latina or Hispanic, and the different archetypes that we've seen on reality television in the past, and some what we would like to see in the future. So that's just kind of the overall perspective. And just three passionate fans talking about some of their favorite moments in reality TV history in terms of identity.
Felipe, can you set up who we're going to be hearing from?
Yeah, so we will be hearing from myself, Humberto, and we also have Geneva Guadalupe. And also we have thoughts from Nigel Bocanegra, who was supposed to join us, but he had a last minute conflict with our scheduling. So we do read his thoughts during the podcast as well.
Well, I'm really excited to hear what you all have put together here on the panel. Is there anything else that you want the listeners to know before they hear everything else?
We discussed like all the like disclaimers that we put out there. But again, we're just like three individual fans who have thoughts, but we don't represent every single Hispanic or Latin person on the planet who watches these shows. So just be mindful of that. And then if you're interested in joining the conversation, we did decide to put out hashtag RHAP Latinx as kind of like a place, a home stop for this discussion.
Yeah. Well, Felipe, thank you for all the hard work on putting this together. And I'm sure that there will be many listeners who appreciate all the work that you put into this.
Well, thank you again for the platform. Thank you for Sam for helping coordinate everything, and all the people at RHAP who made this possible. And yeah, I hope everyone enjoys and finds something to take away from this conversation.
All right, Felipe, are we ready to hear it?
Yes, let's go to it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RHAP's discussion of Latinx and Hispanic representation in reality television. I am one of your co-hosts for this podcast. My name is Felipe, and I am joined by the lovely Geneva Guadalupe. Geneva, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, Felipe. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to having this discussion today. I think this is an important topic, especially since we are in Hispanic Heritage Month. I think it's great to celebrate different cultures, traditions, and countries, and just celebrate the players that we have seen, but also advocating for more representation within these groups.
Yes, and you said everything I was thinking much better and more eloquently than I could have said it. But Geneva, we are not alone. We are joined by the one and only Humberto Humby. How are you doing today?
Hey, babes. Hi, Felipe. Hi, Geneva. I'm doing great. I'm very excited to be doing this. This is something that is very dear and important to me. I will say it's about time that we discuss this, and I'm excited to what we're going about to dive in.
Yeah, so continuing the conversation from the Asian Representation podcast that Kevin and Sasha did a few months ago, and then the amazing Black Voices of RHAP podcast that Matt Scott put together for Juneteenth, we just wanted to continue those conversations here during Latinx and Hispanic Heritage Month. And we're going to be talking about representation on reality TV, some different themes, what it means to be Latinx or Hispanic, the differences between those two words in themselves, and different themes that are in line with Hispanic and Latinx heritage. So first things first, I was thinking we could all give some background on who we are and some background on who we are, pronouns, a favorite Latin or Hispanic reality contestant, and then a favorite food dish that embodies our culture. So I can start. I'm Felipe. I'm 24. I grew up in the Boston area, but my parents immigrated from Brazil. I use he, him pronouns, and I am trying to get into the film and television industry, currently working my way up as a production assistant, sort of shindig, and I am moving to Los Angeles, the area with the most Chicanos in the United States. So I'm excited to see more siblings of Latin descent there. And I have been watching these shows since 2012, and I'm a super fan of RHAP, all that jazz. So do either of you want to go next? Oh, I forgot my favorite reality contestant and food dish. My bad. My favorite Latin reality contestant, I'm between two, but I think someone else is going to take the other one. So I'm going to go with Abby Maria Gomez because she is Brazilian queen. I absolutely love her. Yes, she's a mess, but she's my mess. I love her so much. She was authentically Brazilian and I love that about her. And I think Humby specifically might take the other person I had in mind. And my favorite Latinx food dish, I really love brigadeiro, which is a Brazilian treat. It's a like chocolate truffle with a condensed milk, and it's just so yummy, and I love it so much. Geneva or Humby, either of you want to go next?
Okay, I'll go. So my name is Humberto. I go by Humby or Umby or whatever you want to call it. I'm fine. I don't get hung up on that. My middle name is Daniel. So a lot of my gringo friends call me Danny because they cannot say Humberto or Humby. That's fine. I use he, him pronouns. I am originally from Venezuela and I moved to the States by myself when I was 19. English is my second language, so pardon the accent, and sometimes I'm going to be having trouble getting some words, but that's just the way it is. I am an account executive on IT, and I live in Miami right now. My favorite dish, so many. I will go with pabellón, which is a Venezuelan dish. It has carne mechada, which is shredded beef. It has caraotas negras, which is black beans, white rice, arroz blanco, and tajadas, which is sweet plantains, and queso cheese. It's so good. And Latinx representation, I have two, but obviously the main one, it's my queen. The queen, the one, Sandra Diaz Twine. And I love Sandra since I first saw her. I know all her quotes. I watch Supercuts all the time. It's like my happy place. Like if I'm in the shower, just like, you know, thinking about stuff, I just go to think about Sandra. The other day I had to get an MRI and I was just thinking about like the Sandra quotes. I know I live through Sandra. She's great. I also want to give a shout out to Natalie Negroni from Big Brother because she's Venezuelan and she represents Venezuela great. She's also a Venezuelan queer person, which we love. And I love Natalie, but Sandra is where it's at. How about you, Geneva?
Well, just to, I guess, introduce myself, my name is Geneva. I use she, her, hers pronouns. I am originally from Orlando, Florida. In terms of like my family background, My dad is Puerto Rican and his parents were born in Vieques. But my mom, she comes from the Caribbean as well, but she comes from St. Lucia. So I do have that Afro-Latina background. I kind of had that, mixture of cultures growing up. And then I, of course, went to a private Catholic school for 12 years, instilling the religion in, within the culture. And now I currently live in Iowa City. I am doing a law degree right now. And I guess just in general, that profession is also not very diverse in itself. You only have about 5% of Latinos that make up the legal profession. So I think that's, something important to highlight, considering we are underrepresented in that field as well as in other fields. And in terms of, I guess I would say, my favorite reality TV contestant, I'm going to say, so even though I love Sandra, wonderful. I'm going to say Delisa from The Circle. She's actually Puerto Rican, for those who do not know that. So I wanted to highlight that. And I think that's also kind of one reason I wanted to bring her up as well, is because I think sometimes, when people see, Black Latinx people, they don't necessarily think that they are, have that, Latin culture. So I think that was kind of something I wanted to highlight. And also, this is not competition reality TV, but I also love Tayshia Adams, and she's actually Mexican. Yep. So that's also something I wanted to highlight, too. In addition, I really, really love mofongo. I just love anything with plantains, honestly.
Yes. Plantains is my love language.
They're just amazing. Fried, boiled, twice fried, tostones, anything like that. I just love it. But mofongo, it's mashed up plantains. You can have salt, garlic, a broth, olive oil. A few years ago, I went to PR actually with my best friend, and we went to this restaurant that not only had pretty great mojitos, but also had really great mofongo, and I had a great shrimp mofongo. And so just, it's great, but it's sad because they closed during the pandemic. So that's unfortunate, but yeah, so that's kind of a little bit about me.
Yes. And now I'm hungry. That's
not good. Yes.
Just in terms of some disclaimers that we want to put out there, we are just three big super fans of reality television who are Latinx. We do not speak for everyone in the community. We just want to start the conversation and allow the conversation to grow and continue. And I really liked what Kevin and Sasha did on their podcast. They used the hashtag to continue the conversation. So if you want to add your voice to the conversation, use the hashtag RHAPLatinx. And then lastly, we will be using Hispanic and Latinx throughout the podcast. We're choosing to use Latinx as a way to encompass all people who are of Latinx identity in the most inclusive way possible. I know there's discussion in the Latin community about that word, but I think it is the most inclusive word, and that is the word I choose to use. So that's the word that's what it means. It just is the gender neutral way of saying Latin.
And Felipe, I've been reading a lot, and I'm so happy about the movement of, encompassing Latinx people on this month, because technically it is called Hispanic Heritage Month, but I've been seeing a lot of articles and people trying to include not just Hispanic Month, but Latinx Heritage Month. And I do believe that is a more inclusive, but still encompass our culture, because yes, so you might speak Brazilian and I speak Spanish, but in my mind, we are the same people, Venezuela is just above Brazil. Venezuela is closer to Brazil than to Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, Peru, like almost any other country, And we have very similar values. And I don't see why there should be a difference just because either Portugal or Spain came to us. Awkward. But I'm more I'm more than happy than going with like Latinx and refer this as Latinx heritage than anything else, because it does include my people like you, Felipe, that yes. I consider my people.
And we'll definitely discuss that throughout. We can even get into like the definitions of like what it means to be Latinx. So unlike what it means to be Black or what it means to be Asian, Latin identity is more specifically an ethnic minority group. I am very white, like skin-wise. Humby as well has fair skin. But Latin identity is very nuanced in definition. Like, there's a lot of intersectionality within it. So it can be a racial minority and an ethnic minority, depending on who the person is. For me specifically, I am a white Latino. Humby, did you have anything you wanted to add on this topic?
Yes. Kind of complicated and complex aspect that not many people will agree on, and that's fine. You know, I mentioned, I grew up in Venezuela, being considered very white. You know, I was very lucky and blessed growing up in a privileged household. My family, good opportunities. I was very blessed. And the perception of race and ethnicity is very different outside of the U.S., in Venezuela specifically. Race, it's not so much a hot topic over there. You know, it's not. Venezuela's problems come more with misogyny and classism. As you probably know, like, classism is very huge in the Latinx community. However, when I moved here to the U.S., things change. Even though I am technically white, I feel like I don't belong. I'm not white enough to be white, and not mixed enough to not be white. And it's a struggle that I have dealt with many years. It would be very easy for me to say, yes, I'm white, treat me nicely, you know? But I've been unfortunately reminded again and again in many different opportunities here in the U.S. that I don't belong in that area, even though my skin is white. And I don't consider myself, when I'm on the U.S., white. And I know, again, I know that can be controversial, and I know people feel different kind of ways. That's just the way I feel because of like how my experience was handled. And, you know, there's some stuff that I might, you know, mention in the podcast that has let me feel this way. And I respect how everybody else feels. If I'm in Venezuela or I'm traveling somewhere else, yeah, I'm white. When I'm here, I'm not white enough to be white. So I don't consider myself that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Humby. Like, I cannot completely relate because I grew up here, but I do have like some analogs. Like, in high school, most of my friend group was non-Latinx Black people. And so I felt like I was a person of color, but I also don't have that shared experience that they have. So I felt very privileged around them and like I didn't belong. But then in my other friend groups that were more white, I also felt like I didn't belong. So it's like this weird middle ground. Like, you know, you're a person of color, but you also have a lot of privilege, at least in my experience. I've often said that, like, if my name was like Michael or Matthew or something, people would just see me on the street and think I'm a white person. They probably do if they don't know my name. But yeah, I appreciate you being so vulnerable and sharing that with us, Humby. Geneva, do you have anything to add on this topic?
Yeah, and I think you both touched on it a bit. But I guess generally there is that distinction. And, you know, some people agree or disagree. But, you know, I think when we think of, you know, Hispanic, that's usually tied to The language is, you know, Spanish speaking origin. But that's why Brazil isn't necessarily included in Hispanic, but rather Latinx is more about the geographic region, which is where, you know, which also encompasses the Caribbean, you know, South America, Central America, that sort of thing. And that kind of encompasses that sort of group, which is kind of why it's different. And I think for me, of course, you know, I did mention, of course, that I identify as Afro-Latina. And I think in, you know, in a lot of spaces, I think people just automatically assume that I'm just Black and that I don't have any, you know, other aspects to my identity. But then it takes, oh, people hearing my last name, oh, Guadalupe. Oh, okay, that makes sense, you know, or seeing my dad because he is much lighter skinned than me, you know, and I think even, you know, I went to, you know, predominantly like white schools. So I think kind of trying to, you know, figure out where I, you know, fit in within that mold. I mean, there were, you know, I'd say, you know, Latinx students and stuff like that, of course, within, you know, my school system, but a lot of them, you know, were predominantly, you know, white Latina or white Latino or white Latinx. But yeah, I think it's interesting how, you know, these terms are used. But of course, I think some people use them interchangeably. But I think it really depends on, you know, where your heritage comes from.
Yes, exactly. And even if we want to put it in a reality television context, I know we talked in the pre-show about the discussion on Twitter of Kyland and Alyssa. And I don't know how much we want to talk about Kyland anymore, but
yikes.
That was big yikes. But yeah. Kyland and Alyssa are two Latin people who were on Big Brother this season. And I am not super on top of Twitter these days. Big Brother Twitter kind of scares me at times. But I do know that there was a lot of discussion of like, is Alyssa really a person of color from the BB community? And that was super upsetting for me to see because I feel like her identity is very valid. Yes, she is. I believe she's half Latina. It's her identity is very valid, and just because she is lighter and more like and has fairer skin, like I think it's not fair to undermine someone's heritage like that.
It's a complicated subject, Felipe,
for sure,
and I want to make sure that I don't misrepresent or offend people, other POCs, especially Black individuals, because I am very aware of my privilege and I do not pretend or share their struggle. The USA has a very huge race problem, especially against Black people, that I do not share, and I haven't been victimized because of it. So I by no means want to represent my kind of issues as similar or as parallel as that, because it is not. I am completely aware of that, and I want to make sure that that comes across. My struggles come from my personal experience and how I see people in my community be treated by the American, especially American men, but the American white person.
Yeah. And you, again, just to reiterate, we're just sharing our own personal experiences as our three individuals. So I do appreciate you like putting that disclaimer in. Yes, like agreed, I have a lot of privilege, but we cannot relate to all people of color and all Latinx people in general. So I do appreciate you reiterating that point. And thank you again.
And despite Kylan's behavior, which has been terrible, to be honest. And it's unfortunate because I'd say when it comes to especially, you know, Afro-Latinx representation in the media, especially as it pertains to reality television, I was super excited to see Kylan there because I think typically when we do see, you know, a lot of, you know, you know, Latinx contestants, we typically see people more like Alyssa. Yes. So I was glad that they were showing that sort of nuance within the show. But I think that is one thing that was a difficult discord, I think, on social media, is where does Alyssa fit in? And even Alyssa, I think sometimes she'd be like, oh, well, I'm half white, so does that mean that I'm going next? You know, things like that, which was kind of funny. But the thing is, I think, to think about is, you know, I think obviously we know that the season was very important for the cookout and for Big Brother, because, you know, we've not had a black winner in the civilian version. I'm going to highlight that because I know a lot of people are like, well, what about Tamar? And like, yes, great. But in the civilian version, we have not had a black winner. Right. So it seemed like a lot of times when there was discourse and discussion, you know, people wanted to include, you know, I guess like Derek X and Alyssa in the conversation. And I think that became like complicated because it's like, well, technically I think as much as they, you know, it was appreciated to have that representation. And I was very happy about it because they all made jury, which is amazing to even think about. But, you know, we have had an Asian winner. We have had, you know, a Latino winner. So, you know, the mission was to get a black winner. Yes. But I think it was unfortunate that a lot of people were like, oh, well, they're not POCs. But I think usually when people are, you know, distinguishing, it's like POCs are usually non-white people, which would encompass, you know, people who have Hispanic Latinx heritage and who also have maybe Asian or some sort of like indigenous, you know, background. But I think the issue too was that POC was used interchangeably with black, which I think also caused a problem because it's like, oh, this is monumental for POCs, but the whole focus was really on, you know, the black people. So I think that's kind of where there can be, you know, a challenge in how to define what that narrative is. But ultimately, you know, I think that is important that we continue to see people like Alyssa and Kylan on these shows because, you know, they do have different backgrounds. They do have different experiences. Even Kylan, I think, in the last Big Brother episode mentioned that people do not perceive him to be Latino.
Yeah.
They don't. They perceive him to be black. So he said he did not necessarily face any discrimination as for his Latino identity, but more for his black identity. So I thought that was kind of an interesting note he made.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kylan has so much promise, you know, so handsome and so sweet, especially in the first couple of weeks. When he got his first HOH letter, and like, it was from his mom, and the first thing that she said to him was, mijo. And like, I felt that mijo, like, in my heart. It's just, you know, it feels nice. And then he obviously went a little psycho, narcissistic, crazy person. But it was nice when it was nice.
Yeah. And just because we love to see this representation doesn't mean that there's like not bad people within our minority group. We can, like, I have a whole discussion on Camilla from The Challenge and like
yikes.
Big yikes. But we can get into that later. But that, like, representation sometimes isn't, like, we get to see that just because we want to see excellence doesn't mean we always get that in our reality television from our community. But we've been talking a lot about Hispanic and Latinx, and I kind of wanted to distinguish the differences just in case people who are not from the community don't know what the difference is. So the short and not very nuanced version that I'm going to use is that Hispanic equals anyone from a Spanish-speaking culture, community, country. So, for example, that would include Spain, but not Brazil. Because Brazil, the predominant language there is Portuguese. So, basically, a lot of Latin America is both Hispanic and Latin, but not all countries. And then Latinx is anything in Latin America. So, that, for example, includes Brazil, but not Spain. So I am actually both Hispanic and Latino because my people were colonized by the Spanish in Brazil specifically. But so I identify with both. But in most conversations, I say I'm not Hispanic. I'm just Latino, just because that's how I feel like I identify with. Do you have anything to add on these distinguishing the differences?
Yeah, I think it's just a language-based distinction at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, Geneva mentioned there is like a big Caribbean contingency that absolutely has to be represented as well.
Agreed.
You know, from Aruba, Curaçao, the Antilles, Bahamas. No, it's like it's a big, you know, it's just so much that geographically it's just, you know, that's, it's just the way society and civilization is created too, you know, like civilizations are made by a group of people that become like-minded because they share a space, and that's why we are in a society. That's why we have somebody that has to follow society rules, get vaccinated and stuff like that. Will you live in a society? So I do believe the Latinx society represents more than the Hispanic society, especially because we share stuff like, you know, like having English as a second language. That's something that I'm sure we're going to discuss later. So I do prefer to use that term, although because I grew up in Venezuela, for me it's interchangeable. I'm Latino and I'm Hispanic. So that's just my two cents on that.
Yeah. Geneva, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I think you both kind of summarized it well. And, you know, similar to what Hamby had said, I think there's just really that language distinction at this point in terms of kind of what defines, you know, Latinx versus what defines Hispanic. And it's just, you know, it seems like when it comes to Latinx, it at least encompasses a lot more, you know, places that are represented within, you know, the culture, the traditions, the language, et cetera.
Yeah. And I don't know, this might be more of a personal thing than like the norm, but I feel like Latin representation can even expand further than Latin America in terms of like I feel like Cape Verde is not in Latin America, but I think I would consider them like Latinx people there. I think like Hamby and I were discussing the pre-show, like parts of the Philippines as well.
I think that's a good point too, is you know, the Philippines definitely, you know, they were colonized by the Spanish, so you know, Hamby and I have some friends that, you know, do identify, you know, with, you know, with being, you know, Hispanic or Latino because of, you know, because of that. And it's interesting because I actually have a friend and he said that like he's actually Asian, but he like went to kind of like some like immigration thing with his wife, who was like international or something. And essentially the guy had assumed that he was Spanish because of his, you know, like last name, which was interesting. But like him personally, he more identified with his, you know, Filipino side. But I thought it was just kind of like, you know, you have these assumptions with certain names and, you know, sort of cultures and identities.
Yeah, it is about culture at the end of the day, Geneva. You know, like you mentioned, we do have close friends that we share, like Renzo and Ferry, and they are Philippines, from the Philippines, and they have Hispanic sounding last names. And I do believe that we share a lot of the culture, even though they are literally on the other side of the world in Asia, completely opposite of Latin America. Because of the way that we were colonized, we share a lot of the culture and ways and views of life. So I do connect a lot. One of my best friends since I was in kindergarten, which was 4, still to this day, we still talk. I travel with him all the time, Carlos. He's Filipino. Mm-hmm. And we share very similar values, even though that, you know, it's a completely different geographical side.
Yeah.
So I do think it's important to mention that.
Yeah, and my best friend of 20 years, Marianne, she's Filipina as well. So, you know, we kind of have that, you know, closeness, even though there are, you know, aspects of our identity that are different. There are definitely a lot of things that we have sort of commonalities that always bring us back together. So I feel that exactly, Humby.
Yeah. Just in terms of representation, I did want to highlight like the spectrum of Latinx representation on reality TV. And I'm going to use some Survivor examples. So these three people are all Latinx: Marcus from Survivor Gabon, Brenda from Survivor Nicaragua and Carimoan, and Nate from Cook Islands. These are three very different Latin representations, and intersectionality is a part of it. And I don't think it was discussed on any of their seasons what it means to be, for them to be Latin. I think on Cook Islands, there was definitely discussion of being Hispanic and Latino. There wasn't for Marcus or Brenda or Nate specifically. So these are just like three very different Latin people that we've seen, but you wouldn't necessarily know it just because it is an ethnic minority more so than a racial minority.
I just want to say something actually, because I thought, you know, one thing I was like thinking about as, you know, we were going to have this discussion is I do think it's very interesting when you look at like Nate from Cook Islands and like who was on this, you know, Hispanic tribe. And if you look at the people who are on this Hispanic tribe, it's a lot of lighter skin, you know, Latinos essentially. But then he was placed with the African American tribe despite his Hispanic identity. And that's where I think it's very important that we continue to see that, you know, diversity within what it means to be, you know, a Latinx reality TV contestant. I think that was something where it's like, yeah, okay, he may look this way, but he also identifies with this. So I think that's always something to kind of highlight that we need to see more of those nuances within these shows.
Yeah. And specifically on that topic, like, I feel like there isn't a lot of discussion on these shows. Like they will have representation, but not a lot of time is spent, whether it's in a confessional or like some sort of backstory or discussion on the show about what it means, like that makes it to air. We've seen some on the live feeds on Big Brother, but and I think actually Big Brother Canada does some good job with this, but there isn't a ton of discussion of what it means to be Hispanic or Latinx on the shows, whereas we have had discussions of what it means to be Black on this show and like having the Black experience, or what it means to be Asian and having an Asian experience, which is something that I hope that the shows will continue to explore. And I know we have the 50% initiative to have BIPOC on every single CBS show at this point, as well as Big Brother Canada. And I know that there's also like a change for production behind the scenes representation. And I hope just as the shows continue, we get more introspection about Latin identity through these shows.
And I want to give a shout out to the diversity campaign for making that happen. Diversity campaign that was led exclusively by Black people, that not only fought for Black people representation, but for BIPOC representation. I want to give a huge shout out to the Black reality contestants, podcasters, and everywhere in between. And I want to say thank you for the inclusion in our representation. I greatly appreciate it. And, you know, in especially Black women,
yes,
you know, instead of fighting everybody's battles, and I want to give that shout out because we do have that 50% BIPOC and we do owe that to the Black population, to the Black initiative and diversity.
100%. Yes. And thank you for giving them that well-deserved shout out, because they did that.
They did.
Yes. They really did. And it's crazy because I am seeing the change, you know, like pretty quickly on a lot of these non-scripted CBS shows. So it has been amazing to see, like, even on, for example, Love Island, like it's usually one, you know, token Black woman, but they had Cachet and they had Trina, you know, and they had a lot of men of color that we saw throughout, you know, like the season. So like that was great to me. I could never even fathom seeing, you know, six Black people, but one who also identifies as South Asian. And another one who also, you know, has that, you know, Latinx culture. I couldn't even fathom seeing that sort of intersectionality. So it's been amazing so far, and I hope to see more of it because, you know, even as a Black person, like I want to see, and even as a Latina, I want to see more aspects of diversity within these shows.
Yeah, one of my favorite Big Brother players in the past was Kevin from Big Brother 11. And I love just like that they gave him the space to talk about what it meant to be Black and Asian and like the intersectionality. I just hope that like we don't see a lot of intersectionality yet. And I'm hopeful that with all these initiatives, we'll continue to see more and more on what it means to be Black and Latino, or what it means to be Asian and Black, or like all these blended, or like even like what it means to be a queer Latina woman like Lyrsa. Like that is very intersectional, and intersectionality is a big important topic within Latin identity. In terms of a topic that I think we definitely need to discuss is colorism, because Humby talked about his experience in Venezuela. I have had experience in Brazil where, like, obviously we are privileged in the Latin space as white people. But the definition of colorism is basically prejudice or discrimination against individuals with darker skin tones than yours. And it is most commonly seen, unfortunately, amongst people of the same ethnic groups. So that is something that, unfortunately, is a thing that we have to discuss. But in terms of uplifting Afro-Latino people, I think that is something with the future of reality television that I would like to see. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I do feel like we all in society fall under that disgusting concept, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like a scale of how worth it you are, how much you're worth. And one of the main things that is going to fix this is having that representation.
Agreed.
And, you know, like sometimes like people are like, okay, but why do you have to have so much representation? Like, do you have somebody, like Geneva mentioned, like there's like such a complex identity in Latinx people, like so many countries and so many different kind of cultures. And, you know, we go with the, oh, but only like 10% or 12% or 15% are this and this. And then it's a minority for a reason. Why do you have to have a half? Why you like, it's so annoying, guys. Like, stop it. I swear. Stop it. It is very, very annoying and hurtful. We want to show, just like some people want to show, oh, people from the South are very different than people from the East Coast and the West Coast. And yeah. You know what? We want to show ourselves too.
Yeah.
And it's not enough to have the Alisa Latinx representation or the Brenda. We also want to see the Kylan. We also want to see the Delisa, because it's a part of who we are. It is our culture. And representation normalizes that. It's so important to see people like us, especially when we're developing ourselves. You know, I don't want to play Survivor. That's not something that I have on my plans or ever will want to do. But seeing Sandra, like, you know, especially like somebody with like a heavy accent and that is unapologetically, I call it la tía o a prima, you know, it's like, it's, if you are around my age, you see Sandra as a tía, like you have a tía Alexandra, you're older, you have a prima Alexandra, you do have it. Like, it's, you know, it's important to see it happening, because then you can be part of it. I had been in the past, I have limited myself from some spaces because I do struggle, you know, with some of my identity, like my accent, you know, like that has stopped me from trying different things that, you know, it sucks that I shouldn't have stopped me, but that's just the way it is. And there has been opportunities that I have seen myself represented by somebody, ESL or whatever, and that has allowed me to try things. And that's the key, you know, that's why representation matters. And that's why it's important. It's not just so you can check a box for producers or advertisers. And it's not like a cliche or like something funny or cute or PC to say. It literally, for you, white conforming, straight up people that you see yourself on stuff, you have no idea what is like not seeing yourself and then seeing yourself. It's effing magical. And it's not cheesy. It's truly like you are seen and you are able to exist and it can be you. You know, I have always tried to like give myself to that. Like when I was in school, in engineering school, I was part of SHEP, which is the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. I always try to represent, I am very Venezuelan, I am very gay, I am very myself, and I just want to like show myself who I am, because, and I know it's just a cliche and it gets done, oh, I would have loved to see somebody. There's a reason why people say that, because it matters. You know, it does matter. If you don't think it matters, it's probably because you already had it.
Yeah.
Because you already, you had it easy. So that way, it's like, oh, it's nice, diversity. Like, oh, but it doesn't mean, it means a lot. If you don't think it means a lot, it's because like you didn't need it. If you need it and you get it, you realize how much it means. And that's why with colorism, it's very important to have colorism represented in every single way.
I agree 100%. I don't know if either of you can relate to this, but back when only Sandra was the only Latina person to win Survivor, I used to tell myself Jenna Marasca was also Latina, just so I was like, okay, there's three of us. There's three wins instead of two. And now there are three wins. One of them is Chris Underwood. But I used to crave like some sort of like, not just Sandra. Sandra's not just this unicorn. Like, it can be anyone that like can win. And I know he's not everyone's favorite, but when Josh won Big Brother, I was like, okay, I can do that. Like, I can finally, like, there is someone like me who has won this show, as opposed to like the past winners.
Yeah. So. And I think an important thing to mention about Josh, and I think Sandra too, is they were both unapologetically themselves.
Yes.
They were both, they stayed true to who they were. You know, they got into fights with people. They, you know, sometimes showed emotion, depended on the time. You know, they were multidimensional people, but they knew what they needed to do and had the awareness of what they needed to do to win, you know, and they embraced their identity and who they were. And I think it was really important, I think, for me as someone who, you know, wants to see somebody who looks like them, you know, perform well on these sorts of shows, to see that reflected. I feel like when we look at society and when it, you know, comes to colorism, you know, we have these European standards of beauty, these different institutional perceptions that, you know, if you're lighter skinned, you know, you will have more opportunities when it comes to education, when it comes to social mobility, when it comes to class. You know, there are a lot of these, you know, aspects. And in, you know, prior to like in the old early history, you know, when a lot of, you know, people were brought, you know, over to the Americas, you know, they were brought through the slave trade. You know, you have about a huge portion of, you know, slaves were brought in from, you know, the Caribbean and Latin America. And then after that, you know, there was this whole process of creating these class systems and, you know, saying like the lighter skinned features, you know, puts you higher on the social hierarchy than those darker skinned features. And I think so, even though, you know, I think in a lot of, you know, in America, it's more apparent, like, you know, I guess like the race dichotomy, those differences, you know, it's like within a lot of this, like, you know, Latinx or Hispanic culture, it comes down to, you know, like that, you know, that skin, the skin color and how that affects social status and, you know, wanting people to, you know, be lighter, and you know what, how that affects your life, your status, your identity. And so I think that's kind of a huge problem in itself. And kind of why, you know, a lot of darker skinned people, you know, aren't necessarily perceived in a positive way. And even like more of those Afrocentric, you know, I guess, characteristics like, you know, the hair texture and things like that, those aren't necessarily to be perceived as desirable, you know, as more, you know, straighter hair for lighter skinned, you know, Latinas or things like that. So I think, you know, there's so many aspects within, you know, colorism that is, you know, challenging to see. But that's why I think sometimes it's really important to see this representation. And we even, I mean, this is also a little off topic, but still within the topic, In the Heights. I don't know if you both saw In the Heights, but of course there was a huge controversy within the Heights in terms of essentially it was a colorism issue. It, you know, when it came to the cast and Washington Heights and who makes up Washington Heights, and Dominicans, when we see, you know, a lot of them have that, you know, Afro, you know, Latin background, but they were the people behind the scenes. None of them were really in the principal roles. And when, if they were in the principal roles, they were lighter skinned Latinos. No, they didn't really look like me, you know? And then like the one major Black character, he's not even supposed to identify as a Hispanic or Latino. Yeah. So that caused a lot of, you know, issues, because it's like people are not seeing the reality on the screen.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I don't remember, there was, I know she changed her hair at the beginning of the movie. She had it more natural before she came back, Leslie Grace, Nina.
Yeah, Nina. Nina. So, yeah.
She made it more like traditional European standard throughout the rest of the movie, right? So
no,
at the beginning,
the
opposite. Okay.
Yeah, so because she went to like an Ivy school.
Yes.
When she was in the Ivy school, she had the traditional like flowy European, well, not European, let's call it what it is, white hair, you know, that was like completely straight and maybe wavy. And as soon as she got to the Heights, she let her curls flow, you know?
Yeah.
And, I remember, at the end of the movie, she goes back to the West Coast and she goes back to like straight hair.
Okay. I remember part, and I just didn't remember the timeline, but like that movie was incredible for me personally because I felt so much Latin joy, but I was also like, I have so many Afro-Latino and Latina and Latinx friends who did not see themselves that much in that movie. There were like a few background characters, like you mentioned, or like Nina.
Nina was the closest.
Yes, Nina was the closest. But like, I felt so much Latin joy, but I know that it wasn't the same for everyone. And that's so disappointing with a movie this monumental that did as well as it did in the box office, especially in these times.
Yeah, that was hurtful. Yeah,
it definitely is. And we can have a whole discussion on Lin-Manuel Miranda later, but that's not what this podcast is for.
Right. But, you know, I think just generally the point was, of course, about that was a challenge as well in terms of, you know, there are a huge amount of people who are Dominican or other, you know, Latinx groups that live in this area or that grew up where they were in the Caribbean and moved to this area. And we did not see that reflected. Yeah. And so it's like, it's not even just happening on reality TV. It's, you know, it's happening in these, you know, fictional, like, you know, musicals. And I think this is also an issue that Lin had dealt with when it was on stage. Yeah. So I think this is kind of like something that has kind of caused a lot of sadness, because it's like, you know, lighter skinned people, you know, tend to be more successful, and a lot of darker skinned people have to deal with, you know, poverty and all these other challenges or don't get that sort of, you know, success. And there's, of course, that bias that comes into play.
And even in Hollywood, like, this is the industry I want to be a part of, but Latin stories, the majority of them that get told in Hollywood are white Latin stories. They are like, it's much harder to get an intersectional story, whether it's an Afro-Latin story or an Asian-Latin story, it's much harder to get that because, like, a lot of executives are like, okay, just one minority topic, please. Like, so this is, extends to reality television, and the first part of reality television is the word real, and we want to see these real people and these real stories, and hopefully that comes with the changes, and hopefully then, like, scripted shows will see these stories and be like, okay, these are well worth investing in, as opposed to like the minimal investment that they can put to get away with it. Like,
Yeah, and it's not all with the same brush, you know, like just like go a little bit off topic really fast. You know, if you haven't seen the movie Coco, you have to watch Coco. Beautiful Latin,
thinking of it.
Yeah, beautiful Latinx story that it made me cry. And I had a discussion with one of my friends. He was like, I don't feel represented myself by Coco, that he's Latinx. And I do feel myself represented with Coco, even though Coco is very much towards the Mexican community, you know? It's a story about celebrating El Día de los Muertos, which is a Mexican holiday. And we're not painted with the same brush. But I do believe Mexicanos are my hermanos, are my people too. So it's not specifically Humberto Urrutia Venezuelan represented, but it is mis hermanos, it's my people.
Yeah.
So there's some steps. And, you know, Lin-Manuel has his mistakes and his faults, but he's trying, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, there is a lot of nuance, especially how it's some stuff that he has made in your, you know, in your country, even your country, you know, he has mishandled some stuff in Puerto Rico. Like you said, we can do a complete podcast on Lin-Manuel. But like you mentioned before, not every single representation is going to be 100% positive. But it's important that it exists.
And that's a word we keep coming back to, is like nuance, because there is so many different facets of representation with this community, with like multiple communities. I'm not just speaking with like the Latinx community, but there is a lot of nuance, and it's like representation for so many different kinds of stories. And because it is different than just like a race-based representation, it is like a culture, which it is for other minority groups as well. But it's more nuanced than a lot of other kinds of representation, would like to say. I also, like, speaking of like culture, Humby, I know this is something you're super passionate about, the ESL and bilingual nature of Latin community. So I grew up in a bilingual household. My parents spoke Portuguese, and I grew up in going to English schools. Abby Maria was very representative of that. She played Survivor, and I'm not just going to leave it at Abby Maria. I also want to highlight for Survivor Ty and Nasir on this current season. Like, the fact that they're playing these social strategy games where English is their second language, and a lot of times they'll have to like think about what they want to say in their language, to translate it, and a lot of translation is not seamless in terms of like what something means in one language to another. Like, that is incredibly, I can't imagine the stress of that and how isolating it can feel. So, Humby, especially, I know you want to talk about this, but if either of you have thoughts.
Yes, it's, you know, it's a struggle. I did mention, you know, like being self-conscious about my accent and being generalized and being excluded and insulted by my accent. I have been tall and yell many different things that you guys don't want to know, that we don't have to discuss here. Because it is a struggle, you know, like, yeah, I like to play sometimes. Like, I got into the pandemic in like social strategy games and stuff like that, minis. And, you know, it was something that I had very much in mind, you know. This is how I met Geneva, actually. You know, I played with Geneva over a year ago. A game for Latinx people specifically. And that was the one that, you know what, they are going to be fine with the fact that I sometimes struggle finding a word, that sometimes I say the wrong thing, or I'm trying to make a joke that is kind of like mean and sarcastic. My sense of humor can be mean sometimes, but we Latino people, we show that we love each other by insulting each other, and not everybody gets that. But I knew, yeah, the Latinx people would get it. And, you know, I met many great people that I care and adore. And Geneva, who, by the way, won that game.
Strategically.
I mean, Humby was close. So
I was close. I was close. If I wasn't going to win it, I was happy that Geneva did. And I bet Geneva in that. And I think that I'm going to have Geneva in my life for a while. You know, Geneva knows like how much I support her. I'm always, no matter whenever I see her in what context, I will always cheer and get behind on the Geneva train. She's amazing. But there were other people that also were ESL. It's so difficult. And I've been here in the States for 14 years. I was just thinking, I'm 34 now. In just a few years, I'm going to be spending as much time in the US as in Venezuela. But it is challenging. Like, I'm to the point that I don't think in Spanish all the time. I think in English too. It's like it's complicated in this brain of mine for many different reasons, but that's one of the reasons. But yeah, I have way less vocabulary than you guys. I have less expressions and colloquialism that you guys have. So it is important to denotate that people that are playing these reality TV shows that we love, they have way less ways to express themselves, you know, that have less vocabulary than your naturally born English speaking people. Somebody like Sandra that is able to play with 15 other English first language people and she's able to make those connections is huge. It is easier, you know, for first language English speaking people to just like get with them and, you know, like not include me in those conversations because I can make it a little bit more difficult. I can make it like, oh, they have to pay more attention. You know, sometimes like as this TV show called The Genius that I love, it's in Korean. But so I recommend it to some friends and they're like, oh, but I have to read subtitles. So it's like, dude, like I grew up reading subtitles on every single show because I usually watch a lot of Anglo TV, like Survivor, and I had to read subtitles. I don't think that's a problem. And you know, it is important to highlight that it's something that doesn't get talked about and doesn't get it gets tolerated, but it does exclude people. You know, just like other types of exclusions, whether it's by race or whatever, or gender identification or sexuality, there is that exclusion that we go on top of it just because we are not able to communicate as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was interesting because I was actually going to ask you, like, how did you feel playing minis, playing these social strategy games, like, you know, outside of the, you know, our mini, like the Latinx one? Because, of course, I think that was one, I think, in a space where basically almost everyone who played in that mini still kind of felt, you know, a decent sense of comfort.
Yes.
And so I guess, like, I was wondering, like, did you ever feel like there were certain specific barriers and challenges that you were experiencing when you were playing these games?
Yeah. I mean, I not only on meetings, you know, even in my work life, I have had clients. I deal with high level corporate clients. I have had clients that tell me, can you pass me with somebody else? Because they are not able to communicate with me as well. And, you know, I do sales. So what is important is to close the sale. So I can't say anything. I have to like, you know what? Yeah, let's talk with my partner. And I have to do it with a happy face because the sale is the most important thing. It's not anything about anything else. And yeah, playing those games. Yeah, I do feel like I have to try harder and I have to like represent what I did more. Like I ended up winning one of those games that I think I did very, very well. And I barely won. And I was against somebody that they did okay, but I don't believe that they did as much as I did. But it was so close. And it's because they were a great speaker. And I struggled. And, you know, and that's something that effing sucks, you know? It's a limitation that I have grown to love, you know? Sometimes I do feel like, oh, I wish that I wouldn't like get stuck sometimes or I wish I wasn't dismissed by some people just because of the way I speak. But I also, you know, I'm very well aware that, yeah, I'm struggle like this porque también hablo español, because I also speak Spanish. That's something that you don't have, like you, the general Jew.
Yeah.
So I have come to love it. But it is important, and that's why something like what Sandra has done, you know, I go back to Sandra because why not? Being the first two-time winner, being a woman with English as a second language, being unapologetic here. I mean, there is just so much to it, you know?
Like, there are only a handful of times I can even think of seeing Spanish or Portuguese on these reality shows. Two of them are when Abby had her loved ones visit with her mom, Vera, and they spoke Portuguese. Sandra in The Village is another one in Pearl Islands. And then Natalie and Victor in Big Brother 18. And I feel like that was more on the live feeds than anything. Like, maybe it made the show. But I would love to see, like, in Big Brother Canada 5, there were Dre and William, and they spoke French to each other strategically. I would love to see that for Spanish, like, or for Portuguese. So just highlighting different languages and, like, cultures as well. And I'm sure there are other languages that want to see themselves represented. But, like, Spanish is such a vast language that so many different Latin people speak. And it would just be really cool to see that. And, like, just, like, when I go to Brazil, I sometimes have to, like, do the kind of what Humby was talking about with his language, like thinking in his native tongue, because I, despite the fact that I know Portuguese really well, like I don't live there and hear it as frequently besides my parents, at my house and then speaking to my relatives in Brazil on the phone. So it just, it is an extra challenge. And I'm so glad that like that Latinx mini gave you the safety to be yourself authentically and, speak Spanish with each other, because I watched that one and there were people speaking Spanish strategically, and I was like, yes, this is so cool to see.
I think one thing also I want to highlight about that one is what was special about playing a social strategy game and making it to the final two. Of course winning was great, but you know, aside from not being at the end with Humby, I was at the end with our dear friend Renzo. And Renzo is, you know, Filipino. So, you know, has that Spanish, you know, background, that, you know, that that his Hispanic connection, that that sort of connection. And I think we are two people, when people look at us, we're not people who are perceived to be Latinx or Hispanic or what you would think that would look like, which is why I think we always continue to say that being, you know, Latino or Latina or Latinx or Hispanic, you know, it's an ethnicity. It's not a race. And, you know, we were of two different races. You know, he identifies as Asian and I identify as Black. But we were still have this shared identity, this shared culture. And I think that was really special about it, that we were two at the end, people who, you know, aren't perceived to be that. But you know, it didn't matter to the people we were playing with. And I thought that was what was special.
Yeah. Also shout out to my favorite Mexican, Carolina, that screwed me over and got me third place. Yeah. Mexican Brazilian that screwed me over and got me in third place. That didn't let me fight it out against Geneva.
She literally was like, yeah, you can vote me out, Geneva, and it's okay. And I was like, okay, well, I'm voting you out.
Yeah, that was like just cool to see so many different fans, because like I'm in the RHAP space and that's primarily it. There's like, I besides Humby, I didn't know there was a ton of like other.
We did play another Latinx.
We did, game, yeah. Felipe. No, but until that night, I was like, oh, there's like a lot more Latin fans than I realized. Just because it is a very homogenized community in the RHAP circles. It's like, I feel like people think like Geneva, Nigel, I think people know of me and Humby, but like there's not a ton of like in the fans or the like podcasters that people can think of. So
did you hear that, Rob?
But it's crazy to think about that. It's literally just, you know, us two, and then I guess you guys do sometimes do things. And so I think that's also where, you know, as we talk about representation and inclusion and the diversity of perspectives and ideas, I think it's always important to have these different voices, you know, at the table, not only when it comes to just being at the table and, you know, providing and offering that, you know, perspective or roundtable or podcast, but also hosting podcasts. I think that's important. You know, I think it's important to hear these sorts of voices, especially as, you know, there continues to be more and more shows that now are providing more representation and inclusion.
And yeah, and I will say, sorry, Felipe, but no, I will say that I do believe more the way to have more Latinx listeners is by having Latinx podcasters.
Yes, content.
Because we will yeah, content, because we will gravitate towards it because that's just the way it is, I guess. I don't know. So I do believe, and, you know, I'm very proud of you, Geneva. I've been following RHAP since the very, very, very beginning. I was one of the first, like, 25 patrons when the Patreon program started, but I followed way before that.
That's amazing.
And I always wanted to have representation on. And I do know that Rob and the Rob team have worked really hard. And I know if there's more opportunities for them to expose our voices, they will do it. Because I know Rob personally, and I know what he represents and what he supports, and I'm very happy and thankful to him for, like, first allowing us to have this space, but second for, like, the space that he has allowed many different communities, but specifically you, Geneva, because I met you before, like, you went even on your first RHAP podcast. I'm very happy that you're here and that you represent us. I have one of my friends representing us, and, like, that makes me so happy. But yeah, there needs to be more.
Yes, thank you so much, Humby. I really appreciate it. But I do agree. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, I don't represent all, you know, Latinx people. And, you know, we don't. So I think it's definitely important to have these different perspectives, these different, you know, cultures and ideas involved in these conversations. So, yeah. But I think that's why this is the beginning of many conversations that, you know, we can even continue to have. And I think, you know, like, Hami and I have had a lot of discussions about, you know, our identity and, you know, what that means to us. And, you know, it's been great to talk about this too with Felipe as well, because I feel like, you know, I think there are just so many different aspects, and we, the three of us, just have completely different experiences.
Yeah, I can just speak from personal experience. Whenever there's, like, a podcast with a Latinx person, as soon as I, like, consume the content that they're listening, or if it's, like, The Bachelor these days, I'm just going to not watch and listen to the podcast. But, like, I will move it to the top of the feed.
Yes.
Like, or if I can't, because I'm doing something and I want to give it full attention, like the Sandra Talking with T-Bird, the only reason that wasn't the first thing I listened to that day was because I wanted to give it full attention. So, like, I have so much joy whenever I get to hear Geneva or Nigel on the podcast, because I'm like, my people, like, they,
yeah,
like, I can connect with them.
The Sandra podcast with Tever, it's been the first podcast I have listened to on 1X in a while.
Yeah.
In a while. And obviously, not just because I love Sandra. Yes, Queen Sandra, everything that you represent. But because of, you know, because of, like, what she represents. She's my tia, you know?
Yeah. And just in to close out the thoughts on ESL, I did want to shout out some other players from these shows that did speak or were ESL, because I don't think it's only fair to put that on Abby, Ty, and Nasir, because there are other people that I thought of as well. So Peely from Big Brother Canada 3, congratulations on your recent marriage to Kevin. Raul from Big Brother Canada 4, Natalie Negrati from Big Brother 18 and The Challenge, and Gonzalez from Survivor Ghost Island, which I still have thoughts on. That one was robbed.
I love Gonzalez, Stephanie Gonzalez. Oh, she was so good. Yeah. So sad.
Yes. So the next topic that I had here was the privileged minority and the white minority in terms of Latin community. And we talked a lot about that at the start of the show. But again, like, if you are a white, Latino, Latina, Latinx person, just remember that you have a lot of privilege in that in America. And, like, continue to uplift voices of other marginalized communities, especially if they are your Latin brothers and sisters, like, they are your siblings. So please just, like, continue to uplift all people, because you are a minority of sorts, but you have a lot of privilege and a lot of power in that.
Eso es lo que quieren, separarnos. That's what they want. They want to separate us. Let's stay together.
And Sasha and Kevin talked a little bit about the model minority on their podcast, and they talked about Dee and how, like, she on The Challenge, and how she would, like, put down her black competitors as a way to uplift herself, like, both on and off the show. And, like, don't do that, like, nonsense. Like, we are all fighting for equality. We don't, it's,
well, that's the deal, though, Felipe.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it gets to. This, you know, that's what happens. That's the model. That's the
the system, you know?
They want to put all of us,
like not just Latinx, Black, Asian, indigenous. Queer, people with disabilities, indigenous people, all these kind of minorities. Like, we have to all fight for very few spots just to like be alongside the sidekick of like the straight white man. And, you know, that's just the model, and we need to fight it. Something beautiful done, like I see it on Big Brother this season, and I love the cookout. And something that I have loved the most about them is, even though the cause, the important cause this season was to have a Black winner, which is great, but I also saw a lot of times when people like Asa and Tiffany and Shada, not Chucker, it was a woman, but whatever, we're saying, yeah, I understand, but DX is also a POC. Alice is also a POC. So they were like, you know, even though they weren't part of the cookout or the alliance, they did have that in mind. Especially Asa had a lot in mind when some of the men or other people were like putting down those experiences. And again, not to compare it, but I do appreciate people like Asa, you know, like keeping like, it hurts because I can understand how painful it can be, like, you know, have somebody that you also think have some shared experience, not all of them, and like being them, they became the outsiders within the Black PLC. But I do appreciate that sense of like, we need to make sure that they are also somehow taken care of too. And that's why, you know, like we discuss a privilege, and if we don't uplift each other, but like attack each other, nobody's going to win. You know who's going to win? The actual system. That's what's going to win.
Yeah. And obviously, like, it happens. I'm just here to get on my soapbox and say, like, if you can be some of that positive change, I would love to see that. And like, use your privilege for good. Like, I had a friend recently ask me, they were approached to join the DEI committee at their job. And this is a white, cis white man. I said, do it, because your voice matters sometimes more than the people of color that you could help. And if you're advocating for them, then that's the white people in your company will hear that more, unfortunately, than the Black people, the Asian people, the Latinos and Latina people. So just, I told them to consider that. And yeah, so then I did have some numbers and representation statistics, or not statistics because I'm not good at math, but I have like some numbers that I pulled. So in terms of Survivor, we have 3 wins, Sandra twice and Chris Underwood on Edge of Extinction, which, controversial as it may be, I'm glad that we do have a Latino male winner. 1 Big Brother win in Civilian Big Brother with Josh. 4 The Amazing Race wins between Eric Sanchez, Rachel Rosales, Amy Diaz, and Jessica Graff. In terms of on-screen representation per season, Survivor Cook Islands has the most Latin represented people, with the I2 tribe, Ozzy, Cecilia, Christina, Billy, and JP, as well as Nate. And then Big Brother 18 and Big Brother 19, I believe, have the most representation for Big Brother, with 3 each, Natalie, Victor, and Jose, as well as Josh, Jessica, and Ramses on Big Brother 19. We have 1 Circle US winner, Delisa, aka Trevor. And then in terms of RuPaul's Drag Race, I believe we only have 1. Oh, no, sorry, 2, because Priyanka is Latina as well in Canada. But Bianca Del Rio, in terms of US representation, is the only Latina queen, I believe, unless I'm mistaken. And then also in terms of All-Stars representation, for Survivor, we've had Sandra, Ozzy, Ava Maria, Brenda, and Monica Padilla. For Big Brother, okay, I thought Jesse Godders was Hispanic, like, but then I was doing research, so maybe I'm wrong, but I had him listed for some reason, and that might be an oversight on my end. But Brendan from Big Brother 12 and 13, in terms of crossovers for Big Brother and The Amazing Race, we have Brendan, Jessica, Victor, and Jackie from Big Brother 17. And then the challenge, we've had Josh, Natalie, Victor, Jose, and then from Survivor and the challenge, Jay. And in terms of the most common group snubbed from fan votes, I do believe it is Latino women, with Dana and Yvette from Big Brother 7 and Stephanie Valencia from Cambodia. And
that's
so
very
those are
tragic.
Yeah. If anyone has like, if either of you have any like more things that you thought of in the meantime, that
so another thing, according to the Survivor Wiki, there are about 47 people who identify as, you know, I guess Latin American contestants, right? And that's of about 608, right? So that's only like about 7.7% of all contestants have been Hispanic or Latino, when Latinos make up about 18.5% of the population. So clearly underrepresented.
Yeah. Definitely. And that is like, again, there are so many different kinds of Latin people. So when you cast for diversity, you can cast like more intersectional stories as well. It doesn't have to be like, I feel like a lot of them are classically like the dark haired, white skinned Latinas that they cast as like the seductress or the Parvati type. And it's often like, and we're talking about archetypes as well that they tend to be put into, but like Alyssa, Jessica Graf, Gonzalez, I feel like they're all in the same kind of mold. Whereas put in more Nates, put in more Sandras, put in more Kylans. Like we want to see the spectrum, put in more Brendas, who I guess kind of falls similar to that Parvati category, but yeah. Naturally, a lot of the pre-jury, pre-merge boots are these Latin people. Like, besides Ozzy, every single, and Nate, every single person from the I2 tribe went pre-jury on that season. There's not a great track record in terms of making the jury for Latin contestants. Does anyone have anything that we haven't discussed before we get into Nigel's thoughts? Because Nigel was supposed to be part of this podcast. Unfortunately, his schedule didn't align perfectly, so he did send a few notes over my way. And he specifically wanted to talk about Susie Smith from Survivor Gabon. I was thinking Big Brother. Never mind. Susie. So Nigel really identified with Susie and how she took initiative in her game. She recognized her position as an older Latina mother, and she flipped the entire game for her benefit. She almost won the game. She was one vote away. And he specifically wanted to highlight the classism and ethnic prejudice he felt primarily from the Onion Alliance of Randy, of Marcus, Charlie, and Bob, and Corinne. And there was one confessional he highlighted in his notes to me, is that Corinne calls Susie, quote, loca en la cabeza. And he felt it was intentionally used in Spanish to diminish Susie as a player and as a person. And that translates to crazy in the head. And so I don't know, do either of you have thoughts on Susie's game in Gabon and like her representation that you wanted to add to Nigel's thoughts?
I do want to say that Susie, as complicated as Susie was, I think she represents us very well as who we are as people. And I do believe Susie's underrated. I don't think she's a great Survivor player. I do believe she's underrated. And I do, you know, I do hurt for certain stereotypes. And here's the deal. Stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason. More times than not, they might be correctly assessed. And some people don't mind it. Like when people say, oh, you are fiery and you are hot-blooded or humby, you're so passionate. Yes, I am. Stereotype me like that because I am. Passionate is, I would say, like one of the first three things that people would describe me as. And that's very much who I am, part of my identity. The problem is that when you're stereotyped, that's in a general consensus. It puts people on squares and divisions that they never asked to be put on. And that can be so damaging for who they are as a person, for how they represent themselves. So with Susie, I'm not the one to say she is or she's not something. So I can see how that can be detrimental for her on how she represents herself, especially on a final travel council that you have to, you know, sell everything in just a couple hours and like dictate such an important decision. So I do, you know, I do agree with Nigel and how, that quotation needed to be remarked.
I have a few thoughts on Susie as well, but more in terms of like the fan reception, because I feel like a lot of people compare her to Sandra, and I feel like they play different games. They're just like combined into the same archetype because they are like Latina mothers. And like Sandra was 29 in Pearl Islands, but people are like, oh, she's the older Latina mother. I'm like, no, Sandra was like not even 30 in Pearl Islands, please. But I do think in terms of like discussion, like I do feel a lot of Latina women specifically are lumped together. And part of it is the archetypes that they are cast in. But I do hope that more nuance and distinguishing in discussion is had in the future, like separate Sandra and Susie's games, because they are different. They have similar aspects. I think they're both very anyone but me, but I think Susie was very different as a player than Sandra, who was more cutthroat. Yes. And not to take away from Susie's game, but I do think hopefully moving forward, the discussion is more layered in that aspect. And I guess the last thing I had was like the different archetypes. So, and we talked about intersectionality, but like the gender, I feel like Latina women are specifically typecast as like the white Latina flirts, which we mentioned. And then I feel like a lot of LGBTQ representation for queer Latino men are often the very outspoken, flamboyant, like you think of Jose from Big Brother or Raul, JC. So if anyone had any thoughts on like these kinds of intersectional topics or archetypes, I would love to hear them before we start closing things out.
I just want to say, and this is a personal experience, and I'm sure other people might relate, but you know, I do think it's important to see intersectionality on gay Hispanic men be represented. The Hispanic community is very homophobic. Very, very homophobic. I know that other communities can't relate. And I do think it's way more difficult, in my experience, for a Hispanic guy to come out as gay than for somebody that might not have like that shared culture. And I do appreciate the Raul's and the Jose's showing themselves out there. It takes somebody incredibly brave to show themselves how they are, whether you are flamboyant, quote-unquote masculine, whatever. It's so brave. Like I admire that so much. Please, please show yourself more how you are, so people like me don't have to wait until they're 28 to come out.
I just wanted to, you know, kind of agree with kind of what you both said. I think intersectionality is very important. I think that we all, as you know, Latinx people, we all have different experiences, and those experiences vary on a variety of factors. They vary based off of your gender, your sexuality, your race, your age, your social class. You know, there are so many different aspects that make us different or give us unique experiences. And I think it's important that not only that we highlight those experiences and address those experiences, but listen to other individuals who have these experiences of discrimination, oppression, or challenges that are based off of these multifaceted identities. I think sometimes, you know, when we look at, you know, certain things in society, I think it's like, oh, some people don't want to see, for example, they don't want to see color, or they don't want to see different aspects of identity. But I think it's important that we do acknowledge those aspects of identity and what the challenges bring from having those sorts of, you know, identities. But of course, also celebrating the intersectional identity and, you know, what makes us unique and special.
Yes. Something that I came across in my research for this, which surprised me that I wanted to get your thoughts on, is the lack of discussion regarding religion and Latin identity on these shows. Like, there are definitely been discussions of religion on Survivor, I can think of more clearly than Big Brother. But in terms of like my experiences, the Latin community is a very like Catholic religious space. So I was kind of surprised, and maybe that's like another aspect of future representation, like discussion of like what it means to play these shows and have that Latin perspective of religion, or I know with Humby kind of mentioned it, but like the Latin community is very homophobic, especially men. And a lot of that comes from religion. So I don't know. Did you have any thoughts on this that I just kind of threw out there right now?
Just like, you know, you mentioned, just like Geneva, I grew up in like Catholic school, from having a padre, a priest, like since kindergarten to my senior year of high school. And something that the Latin community struggles a lot is the, don't at me, but the hypocrisy of the Catholic religion sometimes. Not the religion itself, but some of the people that practice that religion. And that doesn't allow us to be who we are. And, you know, there is a lot of Hispanic slurs for gay men that I grew up listening like it was nothing, you know? And again, we keep saying representation, but the more people in our communities see, oh, you know what? It's fine. This guy's Hispanic and black or white or gay, and he's there. Normalize it. The more you normalize it, the better it's going to be for us as a community. So that's why, yes, representation matters. If there's something that I can say, like you can please take from my contribution here today, is representation does matter. It's not just a cliche phrase that gets said. It does matter. Let's normalize it. Let's normalize Hispanic, all colors. This is when there's a Hispanic, gay, transgender, bisexual, queer people. So it makes it easier for our communities to be seen as. And they can also be Catholic too. I know many great Catholic people that identify themselves as queer or queer supportive people. But it is something that, yeah, our community latches on in a way to desegregate in the way of they react to queer people that we get rejected. Or even to women, you know. Sometimes they grab from themselves to the Bible, like, well, the man is the head of the house and the woman has to support the man. It's like, you know, like, BS with that. Get the F out of here with that. Like, I'm sorry, that's not it. But they grab themselves for the Catholic religion just to do that. And that's not faith. That's not it. Just because, like, you try to grab that and you take that away from that specific portion of their religious belief and use it to spread your misogynistic, homophobic insecurities and views doesn't make it through. So no, stop with that. I'm sorry, I went on a tangent.
No, it's all good, Humby. We like you said, representation matters. And honestly, I wanted to kind of close out the podcast before we do plugs and everything with like any reality TV moments of Latin joy that you want to highlight that gave you happiness and that you celebrated and that you think of lives rent free in your head. If anything that jumps out to you that like, you were like, I see myself as a Latin person on this show, on these shows, anything that stands, I know Humby, you've talked about Sandra a lot, but for me, I love Sandra in The Village, just being authentically Latina and like providing for the Drake tribe. Like, we talk about the disparity between the Drake and the Morgan tribe on that season, but that was all Sandra. That she did that. And yeah.
Yeah, Sandra in The Village is exactly how I am in Venezuela. If I go to El Mercado, I do that. Oh, este me dijo dos balboa, este me dijo tres balboa. They told me we, in that aspect of like insulting. It's just, I'm sorry, but we do. Everybody that is a close person in my life, they know the more I mess with you, the more I love you. The moment that I want to highlight is on Heroes versus Villains, of course, Sandra, but it's Sandra with Rob Mariano. And they talk about how Italians and Latinos, we get along because we're both loud and crazy. And I'm like, yes, yes, we are. And granted, stereotyping, I don't want to like include people that don't want to feel included, but yeah, I'm loud and I'm crazy and I'm hot-blooded and I put my foot on my mouth a lot. But like that moment I was like, yes, Rob, yes, Sandra, that's how I am. Yes, represent me.
Yeah. So that's my moment.
No, I love that. Geneva, do you have any that stand out to you?
I think just honestly watching them win. I think watching them win, honestly, it's just been an exciting feeling for me, like watching Zalisa win. You know, I know, I think one of her reservations even going in was like how she would be perceived, you know, and I think we've seen similar people to her, like, you know, Kay and Tara Alicia, who, you know, start off strong. And then, you know, there's always these, you know, perceptions people have of them and all this sort of stuff. And she knew that going in, you know, as a man, you know, going in as her husband, you know, might, you know, I think help her within the game because she was worried about how, you know, certain perceptions and certain biases and certain things that come with playing a game like that. And, you know, Sandra winning twice. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, the fact that you can get to the end twice and get people to vote for you again to win, like, not many people can say that, can they? No. Yeah. So I think that's really important. And just also to quickly touch on, I think, you know, you brought up like, you know, religion and faith. And I think one thing I've noticed too is like when it comes to stereotypes, I think that they usually a lot of these shows perpetuate that like religious stereotype on Black people,
yes,
especially Black women. And like, you know, we've seen this like with like Jocasta and even I think Davon, you know, people who, you know, like have and that religion, but you know, Vizepia, yeah, that's like, it's a huge part of their, you know, identity and experience. But I feel like, I don't know if it's either the type of people, the Latinx people who are cast for these shows, or if it's just that they, you know, choose to use other editing tactics for, you know, different sorts of contestants. But I think that's also a certain thing is that I feel like, you know, religion can be a huge aspect of someone's culture, especially, you know, within Latinx culture. Not everyone is religious, but, you know, Catholicism is a huge component of that for a lot of people. And, you know, I think that also definitely has an impact, you know, within how people approach the game or maybe think about the game. But yeah, they don't really talk about it. And I do wonder, like, you know, is it just because they kind of switch that to be like, oh, this is more of a thing we're going to focus on for Black women and perpetuating that stereotype, you know, rather than within, you know, Latinx and that sort of aspect. So it would just be interesting to see more of that. I don't know if part of it just though is more that maybe the you know, the Latino woman or, you know, the Latino men or, you know, Latinx contestants that they cast are not maybe as vocal about that, although maybe that's just something that they hold close to their heart. So I think it would just be interesting to know about that and why there is that disparity.
Most definitely. And also, like, we do have to like recognize that a lot of the casting tropes that we've seen, like both Survivor and Big Brother, have new casting teams in the future, so we'll see if these conversations happen in future seasons. So I am curious to see that. In terms of like a few moments that I wanted to highlight, like Geneva said, winning, like Big Brother 19, say what you will about the season, but I feel like that finale was so incredibly entertaining. Like there were so many like pushes and pulls, like Josh evicting Christmas over Paul, where I was like screaming at like the TV and like I thought it was a mistake, but then he wins and I was like, oh my God, like that was so incredible. And like the emotion that he had winning. So yeah, say what you will about Josh, but that moment will always give me joy. Abby Maria winning immunity when her neck was on the line in Philippines. Ozzy being a beast is just so cool, like someone like that. And then this is like a moment that I don't think many people think of, but in The Amazing Race season 9, Wanda and Desiree, I don't remember if it was Wanda or Desiree, they were a mother-daughter team, like a really younger mom and her like 19-year-old daughter. And I think Wanda was struggling in with this diving challenge, and just like her daughter was completely there for her, and just like the love that they had for each other in that moment. It just always stood out to me. So that's another one that I wanted to highlight. With that said, we are going to have some resources and like some articles that in the show notes. Do either of you have anything in particular that you want to talk about on the podcast, or we can always just like add that in the show notes, like some other articles about Latin identity if people are curious and learning more.
Yes, support your Latinx people and, you know, be understanding that we all have different upbringings and the norm shouldn't be the norm. The norm should be that everybody's the way they are. Don't make fun of kids because they open their lunchbox and it's like beans and smells. Yeah. Don't judge somebody because they have an accent. and then this kind of person's identity just because you think they don't fit in one specific space.
Yeah. And then before we get into like individual plugs, I do want to thank Rob, Sam, Scott, Tricky, all the people at RHAP for giving us this platform to talk about these things. Again, I want to thank Sasha and Kevin for starting this dialogue back in May with their Asian representation podcast, as well as Matt Scott and all the amazing contributors, Geneva included, in the Black Voices of RHAP podcast. And just like all the Latin people that we've seen on these shows for putting themselves out there in like a scary situation, like being judged by all these people. But it does matter. Seeing you people on these shows is important. And again, Nigel for his help getting this lifted. And then the two of you for being part of this. So last things, where can people keep up with the two of you? And do you have anything else going on? And also I did want to plug, like if you have like a Latinx show, a movie, an artist that people should check out to see Latin people, like, and I always like asking people about this. So Humby, do you want to start us off?
Oh, yes. There's actually a TV show called One Day at a Time.
Humby, that was mine. What the heck?
Okay. Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, go ahead, Humby. Oh, take it. I have another
one. Oh my God. Rita Moreno is everything on that TV show. And also I mentioned Coco. But I will say, yeah, like do yourself a favor. Check one of those. La Casa de Papel, Money Heist in Netflix is huge. And also Elite, but that might be a little more controversial. But messy. Support, yeah, it's messy. But support Latinx creators. Geneva, what about you?
Oh, Humby, wait, before Geneva, do you have, where can people keep up with you if you want them to follow
sure.
you?
Sure. Yeah, I'm trash. Don't follow me. However, if you insist, you can go on Twitter or Instagram or whatever and follow me at Urrutia Humberto. That's URRUTIAHUMBERTO. Again, I'm trash. I don't recommend it.
Yeah. Sorry for interrupting, Geneva, but now I want to give you the space.
Oh, no worries. I knew Humby needed to give the socials whether he wanted to or not. So, you know, I think one thing that I've enjoyed is watching, you know, different versions of reality TV in different languages. So one thing that I've recently enjoyed on Netflix is I watched The Circle Brazil, and I also watched Too Hot to Handle Brazil, and there's also Too Hot to Handle Latino that I plan to watch soon. So I would recommend watching those if you love either social strategy or people just going crazy. But at least both Brazilian versions of those respective shows are super great. So I would recommend watching them. And in terms of finding me, you can find me at Peace Love Gen, PEACELOVEGEN, on social media, where I tweet all about the reality TV that I'm watching and other things in the world. You can also find me at Silent Podcasts. You can find Sasha as well. Shout out to Sasha. Basically there we do a lot of reality TV podcasting. We talk about also like anime, movies, a variety of different content. We are on Apple, Spotify, Anchor. We currently have Sasha and Chappelle doing Never Have I Ever over there. We have Matt Scott doing Black Widow Brigade. So we have a lot of different content over there. So definitely follow us on social media, subscribe, follow, etc. at Silent Podcasts.
And you and Sasha are doing the challenge as well, right? Over there?
Yep. You can find all the content. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. By the way, the Circle Brazil is the best circle season there is. It's so good. Trust me. Put up with it. Read the subtitles. It's not that bad.
It's really not that bad.
You have such a great season. It's so good.
That was like the height of like pandemic watching. Like at the start, that was like what I was tapped into. Like I remember I even watched the first episode and then I saw Abby Maria at the live know-it-alls right before the world shut down. I was like, oh my God, have you been watching The Circle Brazil? It's so good. She's like, yes. No, she's like, I'm going to watch it tonight, like as soon as I get home. So that was a bonding moment between me and Abby Maria. So in terms of this podcast, don't forget you can hashtag RHAP Latinx if you want to be part of the conversation. In terms of me, you can follow me on Twitter at WhatTheFleep. WHATTHEFLEEP. I don't know how to spell. In addition to my shenanigans on Twitter, I do have two podcast projects that I am obsessed with and I love to do. One of them is What You Doin', a Phineas and Ferb rewatch podcast with the lovely Navi and Davis Kama Will. Each week we discuss an episode, we have some segments, and we have had a lot of guests in the RHAP world. So if you like Phineas and Ferb, I definitely say give us a listen. We have a lot of fun and we hope that you do too. And then the second one is the Brazilian Dragon podcast, which I do a lot of different things, a lot of content focusing on the shows and movies that millennials, late millennials and Gen Z kids grew up on. So right now, Jacob Redman and I, we're going through the Scooby-Doo movies, the Scooby-Doo Cinematic Universe. We just wrapped up High School Musical, the Musical, the Series, Season 2 podcast series. And we just closed that out with the Hunger Games simulation with the cast from that show. Lots of crazy content over there. Some Disney Channel original movies over there. Just a lot of fun. It's a lot of like random, whatever my brain wants to talk about, well, we do over there. So that's a fun thing that we have going on over there. My social media is Book of Fleep on all platforms. And again, follow Rob as a podcast on Twitter. And thank you again, Rob and the RHAP team for giving us this platform.
Gracias.
Do we have any final thoughts or just...
Oh, well, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for leading this, Felipe.
No, thank you both for joining me and deciding to be a part of this. I'm so happy with how it turned out. Again, join the conversation. And again, we do not speak for all Latin people. We are just three super passionate fans who have a lot of thoughts on it and want to see the conversation continue. So with that said, adios, ciao, bye everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.